Connecting. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 6/17/2021 meeting of the RDAC committee. It's 3:32.
Okay. Then let's see, we're going to, I guess I'm kind of the unofficial chair at this point still, since we haven't appointed a chair and a vice chair, but the agenda is pretty simple today. I wanted to start with the approval of the minutes, and in your packets you should have
minutes from last time.
I move to approve the minutes from...
You should have the May 13th
minutes. The May 13th meeting.
Excellent. And if Lonnie's internet breaks up a little bit, it's because he's having a little bit of internet trouble. But that's okay. We all understood what we were trying to do. Risa moved to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
Excellent. All in favor? Maybe raise your hand so I can see you. Excellent. Okay, I didn't get to vote because I'm not a member of the committee, but everyone else approved. Great.
All right. Am I still connected?
You are still here. I can hear you.
Okay, good. Gave me the message that it was unstable, so. All right. Then I think next, we didn't get any messages about public participation, so there's nobody in the waiting room to give any input. So we'll go ahead and jump into the one item that we have on the agenda today. And actually, before we jump into that, I wanted to make a quick comment just in case my internet blows up. We're not going to have a July meeting. We'll be meeting again in August. And that meeting day and time, I believe Rachel will be in communication with everyone to see if there might be a better day and time that works for everyone's schedule, just so we can count on getting everybody there and moving through all the things that we want to work on. So as we get into our agenda item for today, I wanted to kind of set the stage as to where we're headed. So before we get started, the SWOT analysis that we are currently working on is allowing us to get a more complete picture of recreation in Ashland. And, you know, we're working on strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and really trying to take a broad look at what is going on, what are we doing. And we want to thank all of you for your time and energy in helping compile all the feedback. We've worked on organizing and setting it up in a manner that we'll be able to be efficient with our time. And this process, you know, will hopefully help us kind of meet all of our collective goals. So I wanted to also mention, we do have some realities that we have to face with our current situation. Of course, when it comes to the resources that we have, and this reality really isn't specific to COVID or any of the, you know, recent events.
And even though Lonnie is frozen, that is okay, because I kind of know where he was going with that. And when he rejoins us, he can pick right up where he left off. But basically, I think Lonnie's point is that parks and recreation agencies across the nation have been experiencing, you know, shortfalls and also having to do more with less, right? So we're not unique in that. And we're going to have to kind of put a cost recovery lens on what we do. So in addition to doing the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats analysis, we're going to have to
challenge our budget, I think.
There we go. Okay. That's very fun. Hi, Lonnie.
Hi.
Are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Perfect. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the process of the cost recovery strategy? Because I just filled in your gap right there. And that okay. We're going to do some cost recovery. We're going to analyze the efficiencies.
Okay. So, yeah, the new cost recovery strategy, basically, you know, we're working on identifying things that we're efficient at, things that we're inefficient at, what the cost of services are. And this is going to require us also to determine what the community's needs actually are, how services meet or don't meet the community's needs, and what we can do better. And the SWOT analysis is, you know, shows that our group has a lot of ideas about all of this. And so to be sure for what is the best path forward, we want to facilitate this process so that we're asking the right questions and that we gather the useful data. We know the truth about what is going to help us move forward from a collection of ideas towards strategies that allow us to address the greatest good for the largest number of people, to use a little bit of Gifford Pinchot. In order to get this valid data we can use to make better decisions, one of the things we need to scrutinize is, how do we know what we think we know? As we go through the information that we've compiled in the SWOT analysis, we're hoping to look at things from the lens of, how can we compile data that shows us the facts about these ideas, about these, you know, all the different ideas, information, the feedback that we've put together. And I also wanted to make mention that needs assessment isn't limited to a survey, to a single survey. A needs assessment is kind of a collection of different strategies, different ways to gather this data, and that we compile all this data, all this information.
He's deep in thought.
we can have can a
take a good look.
Hello?
He's working on it.
It's unstable.
So, Lonnie, one recommendation that I've learned from Zoom is, if you have connectivity issues, if you stop your video, it will focus right. More of your audio. So we may not lose you as often.
Yep. And if I'm still on here, I'm trying to disconnect things from Wi-Fi. I've got kids on screens too, so that could be part of it. I apologize.
You're doing great.
So, and I'm almost done. So basically what I was saying, you know, is as we ask these questions, we've got a lot of great minds here. And so we want to think about all the different strategies, the different ways that we can question the community, the different ways that we can gather data, to really answer the questions that we come up with. And so that's kind of what I wanted to mention with this. You know, hopefully as we get this data, you know, it's going to put ourselves in a great position to meet the community's needs and demonstrate the value of parks and recreation's benefit to Ashland. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Libby. And
Risa, if you have a question, you can go ahead and ask it, and then I'll explain how we're going to facilitate the brainstorming.
Great. Well, when Lonnie was sharing this SWOT strategy, it made me think about the seasonal activities that Parks is involved with. And just having returned to swimming at the Daniel Meyer Pool, I have noticed there are so many people that I don't know that are happily swimming there. And it seems to me that with these seasonal activities, whether it's ice skating or baseball or swimming, that there is a natural window of opportunity for parks to get feedback from these users, because once those seasons pass, it's really hard to grab those folks and glean this really important information from them.
So that's actually a really great idea, Risa, and that ties right in nicely with the kind of brainstorming that work that we're going to do for the remainder of our time together today, because we're going to focus on sort of a question everything approach. And one of the things that you could ask, I mean, if you were to rephrase what you're saying in the form of a question, maybe, is, you know, how do we, you know, how do we access the opinions of our seasonal users, for example? So turning your idea right there into the form of a question, because all the things that we placed in our SWOT analysis can actually be turned into a question of how can we prove this to ourselves? How can we prove this to decision makers? And questions just in general, they're more generative than statements anyway. So if we figure out how something we stated as a weakness could be phrased in the form of a question, that might see us reaching out to a new partner or creating a survey question specifically or doing a little more research about the demographics in our community. And so we hope that this will like lead to next steps. So we put all of the feedback that you all gave us into a shared spreadsheet, which you can access from the link that I just placed in the chat. If you want to go to that spreadsheet in Google Sheets and work in that at the same time that we're talking, that's great. Or you can use the PDF version that we emailed and that you can have on the desk next to you if you feel like it. So there's a couple different ways to do this. We'll also be talking out loud, but what I like about the shared document really is that we can all make notes, even if you can't get a word in edgewise, you can just be making all your notes in the sheet. So I'm sending this PDF of the spreadsheet as well. So if you go in there, we're gonna go to the very first tab. You can see that there's a tab on the bottom for health and wellness, for underrepresented groups, for stewardship and community building. And in each one of those tabs, we compiled all the things that you submitted to us. So we tried to organize them and put like things together so that it would kind of channel the conversation in one direction. Today, we're not going to look at the strengths because we don't need to pat ourselves in the back and say what we're doing well. We're going to look at some of the other things first and maybe come back to strengths. And you can see we've made some columns to the right of every single statement. And in those columns, we can phrase things in the form of a question. Who is this for? How do we know this? Is this accessible to all ages? Where can we find support for this? Is there something we need to do first? That kind of thing. So we'll go through these sections one at a time and see how far we get together. And if we don't finish it today, that's fine, because we'll give you all a couple of weeks to finish inputting all of your thoughts about questions. And then Lonnie and Rachel and I can reorganize them into action items. So let's start with that health and wellness tab and scroll down to the pink section where we're talking about weaknesses. First of all, is everybody there, either in hard copy or digitally?
Yes.
Excellent. Awesome. You'll notice that I did a couple of examples for us. On line 26, for example, I proposed a new offering. Like I proposed that maybe we should offer nutrition and cooking classes, which is great and everything. But when you propose that we would take on something new, I thought it might be nice to have a series of questions that we would then have to ask. Like, yes, it'd be a great idea. We could do nutrition and cooking, but first let's ask, is there a community need for this? Does anyone else offer this? You know, and can we offer this cost effectively? So that little set of questions, we can pop into anything, we can copy it into any other space where someone's proposed something new that we haven't bitten off before. So let's take a look at weaknesses and just go ahead and unmute yourself and we can talk through it, see if there are any questions that we can generate from there. Does anything look like it needs, oh yeah, hi, Jim.
Yeah. One of the weaknesses I wrote down was that if we have too many classes for the staff to facilitate. So I guess I'm not really sure what, let's say a pre-COVID or the after the COVID, what level do we, are we 80% there? Or are we 60% there? How much room do we have to, let's say we wanted to include cooking classes? Is the, you know, because of the staff issues with the layoffs, I would assume that it's going to be harder to fill up the whole catalog with all these things. And so, but I don't really know. I'm not really sure where we are at this point, that how much room do we have to add things? And and so how careful do we have to be? And how do you facilitate these? And how much facilitation there is? So that's just kind of questions I have.
I like that. So I typed that in, and how many programs can we offer at current staffing? Does that kind of capture what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions. Are you done?
Yeah.
I have two questions that I would ask. One is there a demand for such things? I think that's really important. And if there is a demand for things, is there a demand from people who are underrepresented for those things?
And can you unpack underrepresented just a bit more, like underrepresented in general in our community, or underrepresented in their ability to access those kind of programs?
So my observation, at least for a lot of the classes at Parks and Rec, just from who I've seen come through the Grove, and is that those classes primarily seem to focus on people who have leisure time and discretionary income. Mm-hmm. So that means we got a lot of middle-income people. And from what I've observed anywhere, except that the community garden is awesome, I hadn't thought about that. But what I've observed in general is that that's the Parks and Rec crowd. And that may be inaccurate, but that seems to me to be the case. So I would want to say, okay, so for the people who are not represented, what kinds of activities might they be interested in? If there are activities, and not having leisure time, it may not be activities. One of the things I put in there was an inexpensive space to have weddings and quinceañeras and things like that, which we don't have right now. And I know I get calls for that at the ballroom all the time. So for any kind of program that you wanted to add, I would have a little side thing in there. Does this help the people who don't currently partake in Parks and Rec activities, so we can spread out the activities that we have?
Yes, I like that. And I saw Lisa had her hand up.
Yeah, just to piggyback on what Corey was saying, to me, the first question is, you know, what is being offered right now? And the first entity that I think of is the Ashland Food Co-op. And then I think of Ollie, and then I think of SOU. And then the other thing, when Corey was talking, it made me think about the focus is on all offerings is English speakers. And so it could be a niche for parks. If there are opportunities happening, my guess is it is focused on English-speaking residents as opposed to non-English, you know, probably Spanish. And that's way different than probably what's ever been offered. And it provides an opportunity to partner with like UNITA or, you know, some other groups that may welcome an outlet for that. They could even possibly offer the teachers and parks could offer the space, or I don't know, but.
So I like it. And I think that this is kind of where we're going. And I'd love to tie that to something that we already identified in the spreadsheet. So let's see if there's something that's like, that we said was a weakness, and then how do we form that into a question, just to kind of filter everything along the same lines. So maybe the question is, you know, is there a demand for Spanish speaking programs? Or what is the demand?
Yeah.
What is the demand for Spanish language programs, right? And maybe I can put that opposite line 44, for example, where it says needs assessment. You know, I can say this is something we want to ask. Is there a demand for Spanish non-English speaking programs?
I was thinking especially like swimming classes and stuff like that.
Okay, so that can be a tie-on question, continuing to kind of funnel it. Is there demand? What types of what types of programs is there a demand for? Would it be swimming? Would it be dancing, right? So like what kind of programs would we want to offer in Spanish? Okay. So continuing to look at the things that got listed, no indoor rec options for now. Okay, so I see that listed in a weakness. Maybe we can unpack that a little bit more and say, what do we want to ask about that? Who is that disadvantaging? Who doesn't have, what are the barriers to using our indoor spaces even when they're open? You know, might be an interesting question to tie on to that.
And Libby, when you're talking about this, you're trying to craft questions that can then be posed to citizens to find out their perspective. Okay.
Ideally, yeah, because that is that's a really clear-cut way to achieve some data to justify to ourselves that these things are important, right?
Yeah.
But there can be other things that get proposed today as questions that maybe aren't worded in exactly the same way you would word a needs assessment survey question, but that doesn't mean we're tossing it out. We can still list it. But I do like the things that could be asked directly of the public, because then we can just put that right over into a survey and try to find out how the community might respond.
So we're looking at a question like, do you see a need for a community center, a community center? And if so, what kind of uses would you have for that? You know, I know that the community center has been used for the Scouts. It was used for a drumming class that we had once, weddings, all kinds of stuff that the community center has been used for. So it would be, good to know what, especially if there's going to be any work on those or renovations for those, to see that they're in a state that will fill those needs.
I like that. So kind of like, what would you use a recreation center for if it were open?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. And if I'm not articulating anything, go ahead and edit what I'm typing. Go right in there and just change it. I'm over here over in 36F right now, and feel free to rephrase. Yeah, Jim.
So we were talking about the community center, I'm assuming, not a recreation center then, because it's closed now, and the amount of loss when it closed was fairly catastrophic for the recreation division, because we had it booked so much for everything from card playing to folk dancing to, not just weddings and revenue generating things, but community oriented things. It was an amazing facility. And when it closed, that was pre-COVID, and, it was a disaster for us. We had to scramble around and find other uses for it. But getting back to what Corey mentioned about the demographics basically of the community, I think she kind of nailed it. There's a lot of people with some discretionary income who have a lot of time on their hands. It's just a known fact. And so, recreation kind of plays into that. So I think that's our main target. But if we're looking for a periphery and we have a limited amount of staff, the opportunities I saw on the health and wellness was, we have to keep reviewing the classes and the things we're offering and make sure we're on top of that. Where it's a greater good thing, getting back to Lonnie's comment, is that we want to target classes that get used and people show up for, because the real value of these classes is linking individuals with like interests. And then there's a networking that goes on, and then it's, you know, interpersonal relationships. I mean, I don't want to get too psychological on you, but it is a fabulous thing, you know, the people you meet by going to these classes is really the value, not so much the class. So it's really having people showing up for archery, dancing, and all that. So we really should focus not on this COVID thing, because it's winding down, and unless there's some other disaster, we have to create, all this should be created for the future, that we are going to be back together and there won't be any distancing and the mask thing. So we can actually just get back to our lives. And so this is our target. We shouldn't really focus so much on the disaster of COVID, because it basically destroyed our indoor recreation was non-existent. So people picked up bicycling, hiking, golf, anything that was less COVID sensitive, people immediately went to. So we shouldn't just start targeting all those. We should really look forward to a world that we are getting back together, because that's really what we're offering here. So reviewing the classes, I think, was one of my, I saw as an opportunity. We really have to make sure that we're targeting lots of people. And I didn't even know how to, the underrepresented one, we have to identify the underrepresented. I want to hear, when we get down to that one, it'd be interesting to hear what other people think about who actually is underrepresented. And so, yeah.
I think that maybe the next place we should go would be to the underrepresented groups tab, but I want to make sure that if there are any questions that expand out of what you were just saying, that we capture those. So some of the concepts were, yeah, Corey.
Yeah, I want to say something that Medford Parks and Rec does is that they include other organizations and use other facilities in their Parks and Rec guide. So I teach also for Medford Parks and Rec out of the Evergreen Ballroom. Evergreen Ballroom is completely independent from Parks and Rec, but they list my classes in there, and they get a share of whatever, you know, when people sign up for classes through them, they get a share of that. So the only cost that they have is a little paragraph in their guide, and you know, that's about it. And a little bit of time on the phone signing people up, and they get some benefit out of that. They get some of the money from the classes that way. So if there are other groups that Parks and Rec could connect with, that can expand the facilities you've got. So like if we had yoga being offered somewhere at a yoga studio, it's possible that you could, you know, you could invite and say, hey, yoga person teaching over here in yoga, will you list your class in our events? You have to work out the insurance for it. If you're willing to make it the same day every time, and people can sign up through Parks and Rec, stuff like that. If you can work out some kind of an arrangement like that, it really expands the number of facilities and instructors you have.
I just want to add before we set, I think we are actually working toward that. There's been a lot of discussion about that. Dorinda does a lot of cross trade advertising for that, where we all it takes is a little bit of space in our guide to allow something to get advertised elsewhere. So the first level of that is the cross trade advertising, which I know Dorinda pursues a lot of. And the other piece of that is sort of alternative arrangements to calling something a Parks and Rec program. Maybe you're using our facility, but you're doing your own registration, or you're advertised in our guide and our instructors are handling it, or our staff is not handling the booking. So that's kind of a different approach that Lonnie's been investigating, with kind of an a la carte model for instructing with us. Do you need to use our space? Do you want us to advertise for you? Do you want us to advertise for you and have us handle the registration? Do you want us to, you know, there are different levels of like participation as an instructor. So I know Lonnie's been investigating that too. But if there's something in there that didn't meet the need that you were just explaining, let me know.
You know, I think that's the idea. It's just being more creative about the arrangements, so that, like you said, you know, Parks and Rec can get a cut of something just by having a cut, even just by listing something
right
in the guide that way. So,
yeah. And sometimes like go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You can finish.
That's okay, Jordan.
Well, I was going to say like almost like making, I don't want to say like headhunting, but like finding, like having a group like no, like figure out what are these other organizations that are already doing stuff in town, and then reaching out to them and being like, hey, we would like to list your stuff in our guide. Here's what we would arrange, making it easy for these other groups to to have this partnership or whatever limited partnership with Parks and Rec. I think there's tons of groups trying to do things. And, you know, oftentimes like what I've found with the silent discos is Parks and Rec made it a lot easier for me to be able to do that. Right. Because yeah. There's so many levels of bureaucracy in the town that it was actually like a taking the time to go through Parks and Rec. Although I had to like sort of reach out and navigate all that. In the end, it led to a beneficial program for everyone that Parks and Rec is happy to sponsor and support also. So I think making it known to the public that that is like what something that that Parks and Rec is looking for, you know, is like expanding their classes into these like partnerships or whatever, you know, sponsored events outside of what Parks and Rec can handle. That to me, that sounds like a really great way for Parks and Rec to, you know, offer more, right? Make it look like there is and this avenue for people that are looking for stuff that go to Parks and Rec to find out about all this other stuff that they wouldn't necessarily have found out about.
Which is why I love the idea of the cross trade and the guide becoming a little bit more of a community hub. That's not just our own programs, that it's a lot of different organizations in town all networked through us. So I'm going to go to Lonnie in just a second, but I want to take a breath because I realize that I'm not capturing in notes exactly what everybody has just said. So what I would encourage you to do is if anything that you've just commented on, and I think everybody's spoken in the last couple of minutes, can be turned into a question that we need to ask, please type it in, because some of them are, it's kind of coming like really interesting concepts and things that we could pursue. But let's see if we can form it in the phrase of a question, which my brain was not able to do while I was listening. If you think of that, go ahead and type it right in.
Are these questions directed to the community or for us to explore?
Does either it matter? Way.
Okay.
What I'm hoping is that some of the questions we arrive at today can be written in the form of a question that can be just popped right into a needs assessment survey. But others don't have to be in that format. If it's simply, have we found all the partnerships that we should have been looking for? Have we tapped this resource? Have we connected with these people? That's not a survey question, but it's okay to have that here because I'm going to sort through all these questions and put them in different categories. Some of them are things to research. Some of them are things to ask. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. And Lonnie had his hand up and then Risa.
Yeah, thank you. I was just going to make comment off of what Corey and Jordan were talking about also kind of this a la carte idea really kind of is hinging on what the cost recovery, the new process that we had alluded to earlier is going to look like, because that's really going to help direct exactly where we slot different, you know, different programs and different things that we do. But absolutely, you know, for a number of years now, it's become more and more obvious that partnerships really is the future of parks and recreation. We're going to be hard pressed to ever be able to like fully staff a recreation program lineup. We need to work with other people that have expertise, programming knowledge. And yeah, you know, as we continue to be asked to do more with less, that we need to have these partnerships. So thank you for bringing that up and in total agreement.
Bringing people in at different levels, you know, different levels of autonomy and different levels of, you know, integration with our system, and having different levels of integration you know, costing a different amount or requiring a different cut.
Quickly add to, I'm well aware of the roadblocks that exist with working through the city, and so that is something else that I have in mind as we try to improve and develop these processes to be a little bit easier. And there may be some questions in there, you know, maybe even an internal assessment to really explore what are the actual, you know, the legal requirements and everything else that we have to navigate. It would be nice to figure out ways that we can just make things easier for people to participate, to offer programs. And so I'll kind of stop there.
And I don't know if it's appropriate, but I've worked with the Ashland YMCA and Medford Parks and Rec and Central Points Parks and Rec, and everybody's got their own system. So when you're thinking about sort of brainstorming a la carte systems, if you want to talk about that sometime, I'd be happy to do that with you.
Great, thank you.
So I'm making a note of what are the legal and city requirements that make it difficult for instructors to plug in with us at different levels. See, that's something we just can research, or we can ask that question of ourselves over the next couple weeks. So also I heard in something that Jim was saying, the idea that we wanna make sure that what we're offering is reaching the most, is providing that community connection to the greatest number of people, is valuable to the greatest number of people in our community. And I think that's a great question. And how do we know that? So what kind of things do we ask to make sure that we're not just serving that narrow piece of the pie chart, and instead we're serving the largest number of people with the greatest value?
That's where partnerships could really come in handy, is covering those more like underserved or fringe groups that might not they may or may not show up, right? Like it's a wild card kind of, but if there's someone wanting or already throwing events for them, like how can Parks and Rec, how can we assist them to help their event grow so that, and we can sort of get, Parks and Rec can get some points for also connecting the rest of the community with them or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's actually a good question to ask, which is, do we focus on the main core of people who search out Parks and Rec, which is our folks with leisure time and discretionary income, or do we focus on underrepresented groups? You know, do we want to focus on both of those, one or the other? It's worth asking. I think we've pretty much decided that we should get underrepresented groups represented more. But we should definitely ask that question, especially when we're talking about facilities that are things that cost a lot of money, meaning things that are held at the Grove, or, you know, that we're providing the facilities and the instructors, and that are very heavily staff oriented. You focus on things that make a lot of money or more money if they're staff oriented, versus then trying to connect with these other groups in another way if they're not going to bring as much money. You know, how much do we focus on one or the other? It's an interesting question.
I do like that question, Corey, and I think it goes a little bit to the way that the cost, cost benefit, but like the cost recovery analysis is structured, because in order for something to be worthwhile, or to clear the bar of being a worthwhile program to offer, we need to consider not just how much the program costs to offer, but also the greatest community benefit to the most people who need it, right? So if something that we're doing costs this much, but it's serving a huge number of underrepresented people, maybe we expect a lower cost recovery from that. Mm-hmm. And the model that they're using is flexible, so that something is not just judged by its flat cost, but also, but kind of an equation that balances both the cost benefit of offering the program against the community value. And something that's very, very valued to unrepresented groups is asked to clear a lower bar, which is nice. Yeah, Jim.
And there's also ways to for sponsorship and the foundation, and having money available, it has been very helpful. I think, Libby, you've probably dealt with a little bit of that, where you have groups that don't have the wherewithal, but there is money available to help them be introduced to it. So that's something I think the foundation is doing some of that anyway, and I'm not that familiar with it, but having a way to offset some of the costs, because we're being pushed by the council to say, you guys are going to make more money. And I know it's kind of mercenary, but that's the reality of the world we're living in recreation and parks. So we have to balance that. And we give so much of our resources away, as opposed to certain departments that are actually revenue creating departments. So we're at a disadvantage when the budget comes around. Is like, well, you guys don't make any money, but our job isn't necessarily to make money. It's to, it's health and well-being of the community. It's a, it's an intrinsic value, but it isn't, it doesn't really have a number tied to it. And getting back, you know, Jordan and I were at the hardware store talking, and he had an interesting comment about a class he was doing, and I didn't understand it all, but I was thinking of, later, I was thinking of underrepresented groups, and I don't know if that fits in or not, but it was like, he sounded like he had an amazing program that's in search of a venue, you know, and so that's a lot of good ideas are out there. And then and getting back to always reviewing your classes is people vote with their feet. Let's take a chance on a class, and if it works, great, then we've just created something that actually brings people in, and it's doing exactly what we want. And if it's underrepresented group, man, that's a couple checks off the list. So we need to find venues for people who have interesting ideas that will bring people in. And if they don't come in and it's too expensive, then we really have to move on. So I like to say the underrepresented one is one of the more interesting of the questions, because as Corey pointed out, you know, we're representing the people who have money and have time, and how do we fit in the outer groups? And, you know, I know they're out there. Anyway, Jordan, you just kind of explained what you were telling me the other day. I'm not sure.
I mean, so I run this program called Synths for Kids. That's like a electronic music program for kids. And, you know, I've been looking for a venue, you know, for a brick and mortar location in the Ashland area for like years now. And it's, you know, it's so spendy, like downtown. I dodged a bullet not signing a lease like the week that the pandemic started downtown. And, you know, I was mentioning it to Jim. I just started throwing it out there to people like, hey, if you know anyone with business locations that would like to, you know, have a cool music program for kids that's featuring cutting edge technology and will teach kids things that they actually want to, you know, learn, like music production and DJing, podcasting, recording, things like that. Let me know. And he, you know, Jim mentioned the sort of like defunct recording studio space at the Grove, which I didn't even know was there, that's had like bicycles stored in it for a long time now or something. And so yeah, I've been talking with Rachel about it, and I think they're supposed to have the bikes out of there now or in a few days or something, because they were getting donated. So I'm gonna hopefully go look at that space. And you know, I mean, that would be perfect for this program, especially if it was like an old recording studio sitting around. So, yeah, I mean, that's something like we have thousands of fans and followers that already come to all of our silent discos and have been wanting that. And as we get doing those events again, we can use the donations raised from doing those events, which are already supporting the local families and the community and underserved communities, and then, you know, help use those funds to build a cutting edge music program, you know, that would be sponsored by Parks and Rec. And, you know, that's my dream. I think that would be an awesome thing to have. And I think that I could tie in with a lot of kids that wouldn't necessarily come to a lot of Parks and Rec like classes or workshops.
Yeah. exactly what we were talking about, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bravo.
Thanks.
Might I suggest that we tab to the underrepresented groups tab and begin brainstorming tie-on questions? And just to say that I know that developing things in the forms of questions is more challenging than just coming up with cool ideas. You know, it's a little bit trickier. So I'm just trying to kind of figure out what do we ask? What do we not know yet? But I love that Jordan is pursuing this with Rachel, because that seems like a fantastic new opportunity that could benefit the community and Parks and Rec. It's going to benefit everybody. That's
and it's like financially stable, in the sense that the silent discos can help fund that, so we're not like requiring a ton of, and we've already got a list of international sponsors and donors, so you know.
That's exactly the kind of thinking that we need. So what are the questions that made that possible? Like, what do we do to try to replicate that with other people? Yeah, Corey.
Okay, are there successful underrepresented groups already in existence? I'm typing this out. Are there successful underrepresented groups already in existence who would like to partner with Parks and Rec to make themselves even more successful?
Bingo, like it. That's exactly where we're going. And so that's what we've been talking about a little bit in our marketing team meetings that we have on a regular basis, where we wanna reach out to organizations like BASE and UNITE and other groups in town that represent underrepresented folks, and see if there's a way that we can partner, right?
Yes, I typed that up already.
Perfect, I'm so glad that's in there. Because we want to continue to pursue that. That's been just the last couple marketing team meetings, we've gone into that. And I think that's really rich. What else do we not know about?
Like, how do we identify and evaluate them?
Right.
Because you don't want to, I'm thinking, okay, so you've got somebody who's got a yoga studio and they want to partner with Parks and Rec, and they'll offer their classes through Parks and Rec. And what? How do you evaluate that yoga studio versus another yoga studio and say, well, you know, these guys want to partner with Parks and Rec because they can't get anybody into their class and they're hoping this will help, versus these other guys who have this big, huge, successful thing and they're really good marketers and they want to make it even bigger. You know, how do you evaluate which groups to choose when you've got more than one to choose from?
How do we evaluate programs and instructors who have something to offer? How do we choose between them based on who they serve and how successful they are?
Yeah. Are you doing that one?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
And what about geography? Like, are we thinking Ashland-centric? Are we thinking Rogue Valley?
Fantastic question. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
I like that question.
I just had the question. I didn't have the answer.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Because, I said, we at the Evergreen Ballroom, we have classes that have in the past been listed for Central Point and Medford. But we're on county land. So we're not in either space. So it is possible to do things that are outside, but it seems like a kind of a weird thing to do.
It's like, who are we trying to serve?
Yeah.
Right.
You know? And that has so many layers to it, because on the one hand, I can see the argument that we're trying to serve the people who pay the taxes in our district that support these programs. But on the other hand, the people who don't pay into that are often the communities that are in the most need. They're the communities that are getting the least nature exposure, the least number of field trips per class, that need bilingual opportunities, that need more community connection. And we want to feel like we're bringing those people into Ashland and making them feel more welcome and more part of the community in Ashland.
So, what about a percentage? What about, we're Ashland-centric and there is a percentage of our outreach that we want to offer to the community outside of
outlying communities. Yeah.
I think,
I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought you just were going to say like outlying communities.
Yeah.
Right.
I heard online and I just, no. My brain went, didn't know what to do.
It seems like,
yes.
You know, this is an answer, not a question. So sorry, Libby. But, it seems like if you're going to have a program that is going to bring in people from outside of Ashland, you want to do that because you need more people to fill your program in Ashland. So if I had, say, I'm going back, so you wanted to have swimming classes in Spanish, but we only can get 4 or 5 people to sign up from Ashland. So we want to bring in more people from the community so that we can fill up our class. So that's one way that you might want to bring in outlying people, is so that you could have a successful program here because we don't have enough people in Ashland.
Well, maybe we want to first do an outreach to our community and see how far we get. And then if we have remaining places in a swim class, then we would extend our arm out further, because we could surprise ourselves and find that we could actually fill 2 classes, but we don't know that yet. I'm just making this up, of course.
Yeah, Jim.
Yeah, and if anybody realizes that our catalog is on the World Wide Web, so technically anybody on Earth can sign up for our class. So we're already pretty wide out there. And so I don't know that we make a distinction of that you have to live in the city limits or, you know, and I know, Libby, you worked hard to get kids from not necessarily Ashland kids to learn, you know, it's recreation and science combined with the programs you give. And so I know you came to us and spoke passionately about, hey, we want these kids to learn science, and I do too. And so that's why I was kind of lobbying for that as well, that we shouldn't just always think, well, we could only have this Ashland group. And I know these aren't questions because I don't watch Jeopardy, and it's not really one of those things of formulating everything into a question. So I'm a statement guy. So you guys can work out
the question. A related sort of way to make that into a question is, should we charge people outside the community more for our recreation programs? Medford Parks and Rec does that. So my classes are $20 if you live in Medford. They're $24 if you're from outside of Medford.
I think it's a great question. And I love that it doesn't have an easy answer, but it's something we should examine, you know?
Yeah. Getting back to the Spanish swim classes, you know, the ideal is if one of the high school instructors actually takes Spanish at school. Well, you know, you can pretty much just, if there's a Spanish speaking person in the class, you don't have to have a whole class. You could just, you know, have a specialized part of that class is you speak to them in their native language. And so, you know, it's like a lot of these are just solutions. You know, you look at the issue and how do we work through stuff like that? Because it'd be hard to think, well, how do you fill a complete Spanish swim class, you know, or, you know, that kind of
thing. How about what if we offered a bilingual swim class?
Excellent.
So kids that need to learn Spanish learn Spanish, and kids that need to learn English learn English while they're learning how to swim, hopefully not drowning.
Great idea.
I don't know. That just occurred to me. Just listening.
You're just making this stuff up.
You I like that. Can't tell, can you?
Or say, are you just making this stuff up? Okay, that's a question.
Am I making this stuff up?
Here's a question for that. How do we, because the Spanish swim class is just something I was using as an example, but how do we determine whether a new class is going to fill up before we put in all the effort to make it happen?
Yeah. Let's write that down. How do we determine?
That's what the survey is for. That's why we want to frame certain questions that allow us to explore these possibilities ahead of time. Do you have children of swimming age? Would they be more interested if the class was in Spanish? Would they be interested in it if it was bilingual? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually really good. And that's kind of getting at why we're going through the process of phrasing this in the form of a question, because if we know what we need to ask the community, then we can get out ahead of the ball rather than kind of throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks and, you know, running all these tests. And I feel like that's kind of what we do. I mean, I feel like for community programs, especially in my case, if someone has an interesting idea, even if it's like finger painting with plant juices or something. And I'll be like, okay, you know, let's see if the community wants to finger paint with plant juices. I don't know. And then we go to the trouble of, you know, onboarding that instructor and marketing the program. And then we find out, no, the community doesn't really care about that. We're like, okay, I guess now we know. But if we can get out ahead of it a little bit, then we don't, like you're saying, lose as much in the testing process. So I think asking these questions is great.
And I've participated in the other end of that before. People had ideas of a class that they thought would be great and will include some dancing, and then nobody signed up for it. And I could have told them that ahead of time.
Yeah.
But they thought it was a good idea. So, okay. So, you know, it seems like you should be there. It would be very useful if you're, especially if it involves facilities or staff, it'd be very useful to try to do a little bit of marketing research before investing all the effort into all of that.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that. Jim, I saw your hand go up.
Yeah, I guess I have a question for Lonnie about the future. Let's say we do get off of the COVID restrictions and we are going to get back to having our facilities used again. What's our contingency plan for this summer? And also, what's the contingency plan for the staffing? Will we be able to bring some of our staff back? Because, you know, we did the budget thing, but I don't know, I can say that, oh yeah, well, if this happens or that happens, we'll be able to bring recreation staff back. So that's Lonnie's question.
Yeah. I guess I wouldn't be comfortable really speaking to the staffing issue and what we can do about staffing, because we've lost a number of staff in several areas, as you know. Contingencies for the summer, if things were to improve, we have been discussing that. We are looking at some slow kind of rollout of some opening to the public hours for city office buildings to conduct normal business. Recreation activities aren't included in that plan just yet, but we're going to kind of see how things go and hopefully be able to make the case for these activities returning. It may through the summer just be a situation where people can rent the Grove for their own activities, since we're well past the summer advertising deadlines to get info out about the summer. So We are hopeful that very soon the ball is going to start rolling quicker and quicker to get the doors open, that we can get some stuff going this summer. We are planning to kind of go full steam at fall for the fall recreation season. So beginning in September, we're just going to...
Lonnie, I think you cut out. I think what Lonnie was going for is that we're going to try to book a full schedule in the fall, but I think it's still, I heard that we may not be printing a hard copy recreation guide in the fall, because that's kind of on pause until it becomes worthwhile to put all the money into the printing costs, and because the
a roll city, with things are going to open. Did I?
Are you there? It's okay. It's okay. I think we get the. I think we generally got where Lonnie was going with that.
I think I might be back now.
There you are.
Yeah. So, just to add on, day camp starts Monday. My kids are going to be out of the house, and I'm going to be at the office, and my internet will work all day long.
Yay! We thought you didn't pay your bill.
No, it's not due until tomorrow.
I wonder if there's any kind of like software like thing that would let us do like almost like a crowdfunding for workshops and events, right? Where you could have all these different possible events, and if enough people pre-signed up for it, then it would happen. Is there a software platform that already lets you do that? Because it seems like if there is, then we could find that and use it for like all like a slew of possible Parks and Rec events. It would be on like the, you know, Parks and Rec could help do out to get the word out about it. And then also the person who's wanting to offer the class could help, you know, tap into their network and be like, hey, if you want this class to happen, sign up for it now. It's a little bit cheaper. It's like a little bit discounted if you sign up for it now. If it doesn't happen, your money gets refunded to you. If it does happen, you got it for this cheaper price. Once enough people signed up for it, there'll be limited amount of extra slots, but it'll be more expensive. So there's a benefit to people to pre-sign up for it, you know? I was just going to say, like, Bandcamp does that with albums, you know, and so like a label or an artist will send out to their email list and say, hey, we're doing like a crowdfunding thing for this album. You can pre-order it right now for this cheaper price. I don't know. I've seen it happen for other things. I haven't seen it happen for events or small events or workshops or something, but.
Great idea.
Brilliant.
Can we type that in? I'm not quite sure how to articulate it, Jordan, because
I can type it in.
I'm not as familiar with the language of how you would crowdsource that, but that seems really interesting.
Well, I'm just going to type in, is there a software platform that, you know, then we can research it and figure out if there is.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And what I really like about that idea is that there's a financial commitment, because if you just say, hey, who's interested in this class, then 400 people say they are, and then two actually show up. You know.
Right. And there would be incentive for them if they, you know, for them to commit to it mm-hmm. early, because they guarantee a spot and they get it for a cheaper price than if they wait until later.
That's brilliant. Great idea.
Getting the word out about those things in advance would probably require us to go through the marketing process anyway. Even if they're not signing up through our regular registration software, we'd still need to market the fact that there was this pre-registration opportunity and get that word out to the community, almost as in like a preliminary rec guide, like a sneak peek guide.
Right. Hopefully it would become something that became like everyone knows that you got to go on there and sign up for the pre-sign up for the classes you want. If you want to save money or help the classes to happen, it would almost be like this exciting thing, because it's like you almost get to like vote with your dollars, like what you or your kids are going to be doing in the summer, you know, mm-hmm. And sort of get, it might almost create like a buzz where you like everyone gets on there to make sure they get a spot, you know, and then also the people that are partnered with that could, you know, like if I'm offering a class, I would put it out on my social media to all of my followers, like, hey, we're doing this crowdfunding campaign for this workshop. If you want your kids to do this, you got to pre-sign, you know, reserve yourself a spot. If we get 10 kids to sign up, we'll do it.
And if you know that in order for the class to go, you need 10 people, and you're person number three, there's motivation for me, person number three, to find a couple more people to jump on. And totally. So it's very collaborative, all hands on deck for what you'd like to see happen.
Yeah, Jim.
Following up on that, the printed catalog that we've had in the past is probably going to be a thing of the past because of budget issues, because it's expensive to print. But the online is so malleable. You know, you could do stuff that Jordan was just talking about online, because it's just having a staff person format that or put it on and basically put it up there as a potential choice. So I see the printed thing as getting in the way actually of the new 21st century stuff, which is not so much printed page anymore, but it is, and it's a budget issue too. So if we can, we're going to have our catalog online anyway, and then, you know, maybe it'd be a great trial period, because this summer is going to be, you know, it'd be nice to get the community back to our halfway normal lives. And I think that's kind of, recreation should take that as a challenge to do that, because people are so in need of this human interaction, and it's been pent up. And so kind of once you open it up, people just flock to it, it seems. And so we got to have some thinking of what are we going to do in the next couple months, you know, and we already got some great ideas. And that's what's so exciting about the thinking about ideas, and whether it's a question or not, you know, personally, I don't see that is important. That's maybe important for you, but it's just kicking around ideas. We've already got, you know, probably a half dozen interesting avenues we could pursue. And hopefully we will sooner than later, because once it gets back to normal in the fall, okay, great. But we have a little short period here for a few months to try out something, maybe.
And figuring out how to pursue all of these great ideas with limited staff time, when we're all kind of up to our eyeballs, is a little bit challenging. But I'm trying to figure out how we can turn this to the community, you know, confirming for us that this is the direction they want us to go, that they might utilize this, that this is going to be serving the greatest number of people. Oh, and I see, hold on a second, Risa. I think Rebecca raised her hand a moment ago.
Yeah.
Thank you. I also, I'm just going to throw a little wrench in here, but I know with working with the school district, when everything did go online, I just want to ask the question, who are we going to lose when everything is electronic and the paper version doesn't go out anymore? So how many people have, limited access to the internet, or don't even know how to necessarily? I know that may sound unique to some people in this era of Zoom and everything online, but not everyone is online. Not everyone has, I mean, even Lonnie today is showing us that we have connectivity issues. So just making sure, you know, who are we going to lose when we lose that paper component? And how do we know, really?
I think that's a really good point. And we probably want to ask that question in some sort of a needs assessment. And hopefully the needs assessment wouldn't be entirely based on online responses, because then we're only going to hear from people for whom that seems like an easy way to get information and give information.
And I think that's an excellent question. I've got a sort of a shorter version of that and a little feedback there. I'm wondering if, or a tag on to that, is there a shorter version of the catalog that can be published for non-online people? Like, you know, like a three-page letter that can go out to people saying this is available, then people who don't have online access can come to the Grove and say, hey, I'm interested in this class I read about. Can you tell me more about it? And the other comment is that the fact that those Parks and Rec guides go out to people fills classes. And, you know, because we used to have three catalogs, or four a year. And as soon as we went to three a year, my spring classes dropped off. And so, you know, no longer an issue, but those catalogs bring out people who are sitting around at home watching TV. This thing comes in the mail and they look at it. So I think that's there's definitely a value to having something show up in your mailbox.
Even if that's just to push them to, you know, looking at more information online.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, Jim.
And I have nothing against the catalog. In fact, I pawed through it many, many a time, but I, coming from a parks commissioner's standpoint of budget, and it's an expensive thing to do. And so I know that's the reasoning we're printing fewer of them. Is just be a budget issue. It's not that there was anything wrong with it. And right. I know this connectivity thing, the senior center has a huge problem with that. And they work really hard because you're dealing with a kind of an underrepresented group who weren't in the 21st century and don't live online and all that. But hey, they're working hard for that too. And they make phone calls and you got to do personalized things and you try to do whatever you can, but like, you know, words like staffing and budget keep coming up. If there's a threat to any of these things as a question, is it's budget and staffing are the keys to whatever we're doing here. You know, we could do wonderful things if we had more of both. So that's kind of a given, but how do we adapt and improvise as we go, I guess, is what we're talking about right now. And how do we do more with less? We've been trying that for over the decade in parks maintenance. And, you know, we got rid of the glyphosate, which is the Roundup and Crossbow. And it was really hard on our staff to try to, how do we get rid of weeds? Well, hey, guess what? We don't, you know, and it's just, we don't want chemicals. This is the downside. When people complain, things look weedy. Well, hey, I'm sorry, but we're not poisoning our community either. So, you know, you got to balance everything. And that's what I kind of like about being a volunteer is being part of solutions and try not to create too many problems myself. Anyhow,
just the thought that if Dorinda Cottle were here, I'm sure that she would probably mention, with regard to the printed guide, that one of the things that was making it sustainable before COVID happened were the cross trades and the paid advertising, which she already kind of had a threshold that she knew she needed to recoup in terms of sponsorship and paid advertising in order to make it cost effective to mail out the guide. So those, you know, marketing relationships that she built are kind of imperiled by the fact that the guide doesn't have quite the same reach if it's just digital. So I know that some of those relationships are like, oh, well, we'll pay to advertise our programming or pay to advertise our nonprofit in the guide. Part of the reason she was able to get them interested in that was because it got mailed out to all of these homes. So there was a way, even if it may not, I don't know if it had reached a self-sustaining level, but we were going in that direction where maybe if we had enough sponsorships, the guide printing could become self-sustaining because it was such a great way to reach everybody in our region.
And especially if you're going for, I put a note here, if you're doing the a la carte thing. So effectively I pay 25% of whatever someone, through Medford Parks and Rec, if someone signs up for my class, 25% of that goes to them. So it's kind of like they have a finder's fee and all they got to do is print this little paragraph and have someone answer the phone. So that could really, something like that could really help to pay for the guide.
Oh, I like that.
I think of it as a finder's fee because after that, you know, they can sign up through me directly later or anytime. But then if they found me through Parks and Rec gets a cut of that.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. And that's probably the best advertising I have is being in Parks and Rec guides.
Well, we have about 15 minutes left, and I'm wondering if there are any other questions that we might want to look to, especially on the community building tab. And I know that we aren't going to have completely unpacked this by the end of the hour, but I'm just wondering if we have anything that we're curious about when it comes to that community building aspect. Yeah, Risa.
Well, I just want to go back to the window that is open with summer. And of course, the place where I go in the summer when it's a good summer is the Daniel Meyer Pool. And I guess I would love to be able to seize on the opportunity, and I would, you know, be happy to brainstorm some kind of questionnaire that we could pose to the users of the pool, you know, before the end of, you know, by July sometime. Because I just think there's an opportunity there. Maybe it will take too much time, but the way I'm imagining it is that there would be some questions that would be general, whether you're at the golf course or you're at a yoga class or you're at North Mountain Park. Like there's a base of questions, and then there's specific questions for the location of the activity. I feel like I would, you know, I have something to offer with swimmers. Put me on a golf course, and I know how to drive an electric golf cart, but, you know, that's about it. So I guess I was just saying, you know, there's several of us, and maybe there's a way we can just bang something out. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it gives us that first reach out to the community so that we can make mistakes and have small successes and then build on it. So.
I guess that's a question that I have, is how quickly can we get something like that turned out? Yeah. Because we'd like to, you know, use what you're offering in the summer that we're currently in, where people are actually currently at the pool. So how quickly can we turn around this this series of questions that we want to ask, both general Parks and Rec questions and also specific facility related questions? I'm going to put that down here.
I mean, each of us comes to this, you know, with a slightly different perspective and experience with parks. And so I just let, you know, if we can utilize our resources, we can do more with less.
Yeah.
Lisa, I'll jump in because the comment was about the pool, and my silence isn't disapproval. I'm just kind of contemplating how that would look with everything else going on. But definitely let's think about exploring that further.
Could that just be a little half sheet that people fill out their comments or whatever?
That's definitely one possibility. And I think that maybe once we figure out what we want to know, right?
Yeah.
Through this process, we figure out what we're trying to find out, and then we figure out the best way to ask that question. You know, is it something that can be easily answered by the checkbox on a quarter page flyer? Is it something that we mail? Is it something that we, you know, I think there's something to be said for reaching the people who are just park users, who just drift through the park. And I'm curious about how to access those people and find out what their needs and accessibility concerns are, because they may be drifting through North Mountain Park, but they may not be taking us up on our programming. And I'd love to know why, you know, but it would mean I'd actually have to stop somebody on the trail and say, how did you find out about us? And did you know that we have programming? And do you work odd hours and our programming hours don't actually work for you? What's going on? You know?
Are you completely satisfied? And this is the best part of your week and it's perfect.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Is there anything we could give you that you would pay for?
You could put a donation box out there. I walk through the park all the time. It's beautiful.
I want very much to do that. I actually have a plan that I would like to implement with that, but I'm having a little trouble. So maybe we can brainstorm that. I very much want there to be a very simple scannable QR code on a post that says, do you love this park? Scan here, press donate now.
Beautiful.
I love that. So, or if you can't donate, this was my idea. If you can't donate, drop us a comment about how much you love our park. Scan here and there's two buttons. Drop us a comment about how much you love us or give us actual cash.
Either way, volunteer.
Either way, it helps us hugely. You know, like honestly, with when it comes to like morale and my needs as a human being, I need to have the people telling me what the park means to them, or else I get super, super burned out. And I don't have the open door experience of having people come in and say, oh my God, I love this park. Can I drop $5 in your box? This is amazing. So I'd love for there to be a virtual way to do that. Yeah, Jim.
When we were doing the Lithia Park Master Plan, which was a $250,000 endeavor for hiring consultants, and we tried every possible way to gather information, just like we were discussing here.
Yeah.
And a large portion of it was, hey, don't mess it up. You know, it was like, oh, okay, well, hey, we're paying $250,000 for people to tell us not to mess up Lithia Park. I love that kind of input because I don't want to mess it up either. But it's really a difficult thing, especially if it's on anything printed. That's why I keep defaulting to the internet and all those things, because the people are savvy. They can punch out and bang out stuff easy and tell you exactly. I can show you emails of very articulate people in the mountain bike community that tell me quite succinctly that we need more trails. So the lobbying effort is out there, but it's most of it is this electronic way. And you know, we even tried getting the schools a questionnaire that the kids would take home, and then we could get information that way. We're always looking for ways, the polling and questionnaires, anything that's printed or needs to be mailed out is a death knell, because it's just so expensive to mail stuff out. We tried the newsletter. You're familiar with the utility bill and that thing's packed full, and it's really hard to squeeze in, get anything out of that anything that's important. And so there's just, you know, we need, and the question is, how do we get the word out there that yes, isn't going to cost us? It isn't going to be a budget issue, you know, and the electronic thing is the easy way. But then as somebody said, it really limits the amount of people that are going to respond. So that's just some of the realities of what we're doing.
Although the people who have money have phones. I participate in Dancing with the Rogue Valley Stars, and they have a thing where you can just go and you text to some number and you type in how much money you want to donate, and it takes all of 10 seconds to do this. So if you had a sign out there at one of the parks that said, you know, you want to make a donation, text this number to this phone number and say how much you want to donate, and it does it, you know, within seconds. And that all you need then is a sign. You don't have to worry about having equipment that's going to break down or anything like that.
I think that's great. And I think not doing that means that we're probably some people are drifting through our grasp. You know, they're potential donors, they're potential supporters. And if we don't have a way to do that, then they might be just, you know, we're not accessing them quite the right way. So I like that. And I think it's really good, Jim, that you have this experience trying to get the feedback from the community in all of these different ways already. And you know which ones kind of worked and which ones people replied to and which ones they didn't. Maybe, you know.
And Dorinda and Michael, and yeah. I'm sure Lonnie has some of that information, you know. And anybody want to go back and look at some of the older catalogs to see, hey, the things we used to do, it was really the pre-COVID world was wonderful. I didn't realize how much we lost during this COVID thing of the social interaction. So it's just, how do we get back to that? And how do we find out what people want? Like I say, I get tons of emails and people very much know what they want and they will tell me, but that is a pretty select group and they're usually organized too, that people are saying, hey, we want you to give input. And it's amazing how non-stock the responses are. People actually write paragraphs of their own feelings and you read them all and you realize, well, this isn't some, oh, we want this, we want it now. It's like they explain who they are, what they are, why they want it. And those are, it's a pretty finite amount of people, but it is, they are out there and they really do know what they want. And so it takes the guesswork out of it, I think. And, you know, on that note, I have to be somewhere in the next 3 minutes. And so I hate to leave early, but I'm going
to. Well, we need to wrap it on time anyway, Jim. So here's what I'm thinking. Just as a quick way to close, we've got the stuff that you've typed into the spreadsheet so far, as well as the stuff that was typed into the chat while we were going along. And we're going to copy that and we're going to make sure to compile all of it. And then we're going to sort it. But before we do, before Lonnie and I take a crack at sorting through everything and trying to figure out what's needs assessment, what's research, what's action items, I would love it if you're able to spend a little bit more time with this spreadsheet over the next maybe 2 weeks. So by the end of the month, we'll give you a little bit of time by the end of the month, by like June 30th, I'll take everything that's in there and I'll try to make some sense out of it. But between now and the next 2 weeks, I would absolutely love it to be an active resource that you maybe everybody take a little bit more time with, sort through the things we put there today, and maybe give us some more survey questions, potential avenues, anything we didn't manage to capture today. I'd love to get it in there by the end of the month. Everybody cool with that?
Definitely.
All right. Lonnie, did you have anything to say as we close?
No, I think you wrapped it up beautifully and I don't want to mess it up.
Okay. Well, we won't have a meeting in
July,
but we will meet again in August and that'll give us the month of July on our end to start turning everything that we've brainstormed here today into some action items and potential survey questions.
And if you determine that you want to, you know, do a quick brainstorm meeting. I'm volunteering myself and it's possible that others in our group and those that didn't make it to the meeting could also pipe in and help bang something out.
That's a good idea. If we have less than a quorum, perhaps we can just get a small working group together to bang out questions so that we can have like Risa's saying, a kind of a quick and dirty version that we can hand out to people who attend to the pool this summer.
Imperfect, but
yeah.
You know, it might get us a little bit further down the road.
Okay. Well, we'll let you know about that when Rachel gets back. We'll try to schedule both of those things.
Great.
Thank you, everyone. If you need to jump off, please do. If anybody wants to stay on, I'll be here for another minute or two.
Hey, thanks, thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, y'all.
And Libby,
should I stop recording?
Sure. Yeah.
Stop.